This is March 23rd in the year 2001, and this is Bob Gilgore interviewing Vivian Fouché at her office at 1611 East Franklin Street.
Good afternoon, Vivian.
Hi, Bob.
I know it's been a long day for you, and you've been very busy, so we'll just get started here. And the first question I will ask you is, what was it like growing up in Chapel Hill?
I guess my best memory starts at around age 6, and I would say it was a pretty confusing time for me. And by that I mean I went to school with a girlfriend of mine, Addie Mae Winstead is her name. She's now Addie Mae Charleston, lives in Washington, D.C. But she took me to school with her. I was around 5, actually, and I enjoyed that immensely, but I wasn't supposed to be enrolled in school, so I was just going and spending the day with her. I had a lot of friends, as I remember. I hope that's right. But my memory my memory with my family is probably what I mean by confusing, because I spent almost all of my time with my grandmother. My mother worked, as did my dad. And I was with her with my grandmother during the day. She was very poor, and had, I don't know what I want this to be part of the interview, but she was just very poor, and it didn't matter because it was totally a situation where I felt loved, and you know, just had people coming and going, and it felt good, but it was confusing to me because I didn't really understand having to go every day away from home, and I really had rather have been at home playing, but I couldn't be. I guess around when I started first grade, I think this is my memory, and if my teachers were alive, they'd probably say that isn't true, but I always remember loving school and really thriving in that space. And as I look back on it, think of myself even then as a leader. I mean, we would, for instance, have class plays. This may have been around fifth grade, and had several leading parts, but it was just a good time. I guess it's the thing that I miss most when I think about what my grandkids have now as opposed to what I had, where things weren't perfect at Orange County Training School, let me tell you, and some of the teachers weren't always fair, and not all of them were excellent teachers. But if you happen to, as I did, run across some who really, really cared about you, as I had the good fortune to do, had some really good things happen. I particularly mentioned remember my third grade teacher, Ms. Lampley, who was just a love and nurturing and just an excellent teacher. You know, taught me what I needed to know about how to write, and I don't write that legibly, but back then I was doing a little bit better. And then there was a fourth grade teacher, Norma Snipes, who I just think of her with this look on her face of, you can do better than that. That was always her challenge, both to me and I guess everybody else. But she was really a super teacher, played the piano beautifully, and I remember thinking someday I'd like to play the piano like she did. I didn't ever get that good, but I did play the piano. I had a sixth grade teacher, Melvin Scales. Good looking, very handsome, lovely, just a great guy. And all of the kids loved him, especially the girls. He was never inappropriate with any of the girls that I knew anything about. But it meant a lot to have Mr. Scales, as we all called him, be there and be involved with us. He would play with us at play ball. And I mean, he just really was one of the kids at lunchtime and recess, just really a neat guy. And I remember one summer the black churches used to all get together and go to Pullen Park in Raleigh, the only place we could go actually for a picnic. But all the churches would get together, and it was great fun. You'd get to see kids from all over town, but we'd get in these buses and trailway buses and drive over to Raleigh. And this particular time, I don't know what the reason is, but I was driving with my mom and dad to the picnic. And Mr. Scales rode with me in the car, and I just thought I was hot stuff because he was in my car riding with me. And it's we were having a conversation about something, and I said, I have soul. And I'll never forget this. He said, you don't mean you have soul, you mean you have seen. And it just stands out as a time when I learned, you know, how to use soul and seen. But it was just a very special time. Then I guess what stands out for me, I had a great seventh grade teacher, Miss Waddell, and she was just super. Just made us understand if you make seventh grade, it's probably not anything you can't do, because seventh grade is the, you know, it's where we separate men from the boys kind of thing. And I love school, and she really challenged us a lot. I went to eighth grade, and there was a music teacher, Mr. Pickard, Harry Pickard. I think he's probably still living and lives in Winston-Salem. And he had a course for the high school, grades 9 through 12. And every moment I got, I used to hang around his room because I wanted to be a part of that course. I wasn't supposed to be because I was only eighth grade. But he decided to let me try out with the alto singers. I didn't know I was an alto, but anyway, it's what he let me do. And I got into that choir in eighth grade, and I thought, you know, this is my future. I'm going to be a soloist, because I didn't make it there. But the point of it is I felt acceptance all along the way. And somehow I was able to use that acceptance to be a good person, whatever that means, whatever that meant at that time. I played basketball for Mrs. Fulford. I think she's still living in Beaufort, North Carolina. I was on the girls' team. And as I said, I made first string, and that was a big deal. We had Mary Jones, I think, told you about where we played, but that was a really good time. We did a lot of traveling, and
now tell me about your experiences, though. I don't assume that Mary Jones told me everything.
Yeah, well, I was going to say that I guess the biggest deal was playing Hillside from Durham, and we almost never could beat them. But it was the game of the century for us. You know, they'd come over here and kind of tease us about where we were playing. But we had, sometimes we played them a good game, other times not. But I had what they called a hook shot. And I was a forward, so was Mary Jones. And I can't remember the other forward we had. But anyway, I guess that changed with Elsie Gear and some others. But I had a shot where the play would be set up so that I'd come down the middle of the floor and then go to my left and shoot back right. And it was my hook shot. It was great fun. And many times we'd have a write-up in the Durham Morning Herald. They'd say Mary Jones scored 16, Vivian Fashie 6 or whatever. But it was so good to see that in print, you know? It was just something. Anyway,
Talk about the basketball court.
The basketball what?
The basketball court.
The basketball court was, see, I'm not good at measurements, but we had a stage at one end of it, and the other portion of the, I don't know how to do it in terms of space, but it wasn't a very big floor. But even so, it was divided in half, so that the forwards, in those days, the forwards played on one end of the team and the guards on the other end. And then we had the posts in the floor that you had to be sure you didn't run into when you were flying down the floor to shoot your ball kind of thing. But the floor was well kept. It was wood, of course, shiny as a penny. And the janitor took great pride in keeping that floor up. And
did you have a high ceiling?
It was very low ceiling.
So did that alter your shot?
I guess it did. I mean, I didn't know anything any different, so I would say no, it didn't alter my shot. That's all I ever knew. But when we would have when we'd put on plays, I was trying to remember the name of the play when I first talked to you that we did. I remember I wore a blue polka dot dress that had eyelets on the front of it. And that was the main star was Rosalie Register, whom I haven't seen in 50 years. But that play was put on to a packed house. I mean, people were standing all around the parents, all around the side of the auditorium that was also our gym. And afterwards it was just the feeling of being a celebrity. I mean, you know, you learn those parts. And we used to, the other thing about being in these school plays is that we get to be out of class because we had to practice. I mean, we took that practice seriously, too. And so there was a lot of practice that went into the play. And then we finally got to put it on. And it was just a grand moment. I mean, we'd have, the stage would have props or whatever. And I think back then, I'm thinking, geez, you know, it's amazing how much people knew then about what it took to make it. I mean, you know, at 13, you don't know this, but we were around teachers who had such a vision for us that, I mean, it just, it's too late, but it makes me really know what value they had for, you know, for us as teachers. And
can you go into that again when you say the vision of what it took to make it?
Well, it's like at our audit, when we would have what would they call them, assembly, we'd have to go into assembly and go through whatever needed to be gone through. But I could see C.A. McDougal, who was principal, he'd be taking us through some things or talking about some things, maybe R.D. Smith, who was shop teacher, but they would just be talking to us about whatever. And the point of it is that it wasn't that, I mean, I don't really know how to describe it, but it was just a sense of they wanted us to do what was right. Now, at that time in my life, it felt real constraining and like they were just wanting us to be, you know, straight and narrow. But the truth of it is, and I know this being black, that they were saying we want you to be safe. But I didn't know that then. I didn't know that there were ways that we had to behave and be and appear to be so that we would not be at risk, even in Chapel Hill. And I didn't understand it for the longest time. In fact, I can remember once when my dad and I were coming from Church Street to Franklin Street. I might have been 13, 14 years old, and we were walking to a shoe store called E.A. Brown. This is really a long time ago. But there were these white guys on the corner of what was then, oh, it was Hearn's Grocery or something along there. But as my dad and I walked by, these guys made some comment under their breath and looked like they were going to do something to me. And I remember my dad grabbing me and saying to them, you leave her alone. And it felt so out of context because we hadn't said anything to them, didn't pay them any attention. They just wanted to do something. So I think, you know, that's what the people at school are saying. You have to be mindful. You have to know that you're not in such a friendly place. Although it looks friendly, it's not so friendly. And that was a hard lesson to learn. We doing okay? Okay, okay. And your questions helped me to say what I need to say because I'm appreciating the people crying because it does bring back a lot of feelings. It really does.
I want to revisit your childhood, if we can take you away from school for a little bit, some of the pain that you're showing with your tears here. Tell me about your mother and father, what they were like, what they did for a living, what kind of a house you lived in, whether family was around you, where you lived.
I lived my early years, 1 through 6, on Graham Street in Chapel Hill. I may have even been born there. My house is still there, actually, and I passed by, and it's now student housing, and I don't know who owns it. But my mother worked as a housekeeper and a maid, and they were the good jobs. She had a very hard job at University Laundry, where she was on her feet and worked until about 4:30 every day. I'm not going to be able to do this.
So she wasn't home?
No, she wasn't at home, and I would come in from school, and there wouldn't be anybody there. So I was there for about 2 hours alone, and I guess that was always the case unless I was going to my grandmother's. And I didn't usually do that during the school week. I mean, that was, I just would come home. And that worked pretty good because I was really involved in school stuff, so I was very often at school late afternoon, so it wasn't such a big deal. But I can remember many days coming home, you know, and having to wait for my mom to get home. My dad worked even later because he, the job I know him from is working for University Cleaners, where he drove the delivery truck and also did some pressing and cleaning. But one of the highlights of his job was that football season, he would get, University Cleaners would clean the uniforms for Carolina football players, okay? So I'd get the, huh?
What was the name of the cleaner that did this?
University Cleaners. Uh-huh. I think that's right. But I would sometimes ride with him in the truck to do pick up around town. But I especially enjoyed going with him to pick up the stuff from the campus. Now, I don't know what made that special, but I remember that being something that was, it stands out for me. I don't know why. But I do know that during the year when the games were on, I would go with him to some of the football games, and he would meet some of the players who were then adults who'd come back for the game, and they always seemed so happy to see him. But it's also a point of shame for me because they were real condescending, you know? And he got off on it so much because they were always pressing his hand with money. I mean, they would give him money. And I didn't ever feel good about that. In fact, I felt embarrassed, but embarrassed about it. That's all I can tell you.
I befuddled. Why were they giving money?
Well, I mean, when I look back on it, I'd say maybe they had a conscience, you know, and they had some thought about how he was struggling to make ends meet or whatever, and they had gone ahead with their good education and made good and were back for the football game and saw Joe and would give him a little, not really a little money, they'd give him lots of money. You know, happy to see him and give him money.
And they knew him because they were former football players?
Yeah, yeah. That was his relationship with them.
How did he know then that someone who simply picked up the uniform?
He wasn't the kind of guy that would just simply know that. He would know, he'd make it his business to know you. And that's what he did. It's sort of, we have a saying here, which I probably, anyway.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't know that I want to say that, but
well, let me shut
it was just, okay. The point I was making about my dad is what I often say today to people, which is, don't do the darky routine. I think it's insulting and it's humiliating, and it's not a way to grow self-esteem. This is me speaking now. But when I saw my dad kind of playing up to these guys to make them better than him or to make them bigger than he was and that kind of just playing up to them, it was a bad feeling. I really felt humiliated by it, but I didn't have words for it, and I couldn't say it to my dad because I didn't even know what I was feeling. I just knew I felt uncomfortable. But he behaved like that was the way to make it, because it was the way for him to make it as a black man.
And you use terms that I
step and fetch it.
Step and fetch it, I've heard, but the other
darky, routine.
Shucking and
jiving.
I've never heard that.
Really? That's putting people on, you know? I want you to think, I really think you're the greatest thing out there, but the truth be known, I hate your guts. You know, I don't like you, but I got to play this game because that way you'll give me X and I'll be able to do Y.
You'll give me money.
That's right. That's right. And it was very yucky. It really was. But I love my daddy. I really did, and he loved me and took good care of me. I'll go back to my mom for a minute, who worked at the laundry. She was a really good cook. I didn't learn to cook too much with her, but she was really good. She worked, you probably won't know this name, but she worked for Walter Spearman, journalism professor. And the Spearmans loved her. Everywhere she worked, I mean, all the families that she ever worked for loved her, adored her. She was a good maid, okay? And they were good to her. But,
she'd be a maid that also worked at the laundry?
Well, that's what I was saying. The maid work came after the laundry work. She did that for as long as she could, and then her legs, began to give her so much trouble she couldn't tolerate standing on the cement floor.
So being in the laundry took a toll on
absolutely
physically.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But it was a fairly decent job, you know, and so
in what regard?
Pay. I mean, not any other way, but it paid, at least she believed it paid better than anything else she could do. But once she left the laundry and started working for a private family, she didn't do too badly. I mean, she worked for families who really, I would say even today, had a lot of integrity and weren't willing to take advantage of her. And so she didn't do badly. Charlie Jones, who was minister at Presbyterian Church, she worked for them. They were very good to her. She to them. Paul Green, she worked there. I used to go play with his daughters. Betsy and the other kid, I don't remember, but used to go to their house and with Mama and play. And well, we swore we'd be friends, but I immediately lost touch with them once I grew up and they grew up. I don't know whether they're around anymore. But anyway, she didn't have, I can't remember how far she went in school, but I don't think either of them maybe even graduated high school. But as I was saying earlier, the word in the house for me was not if you go, it was always when you go.
When you go to
college. Mm-hmm. You have to go. It's the only way to be somebody and to make it. And I wanted to go to West Virginia State. Don't know why, don't know where it came from, have no clue. The only thing that turned me away from it was I needed to be able to swim to graduate. And so I decided I'm not going there. I was a coward even then. And ended up going to North Carolina Central at Durham, is what we called it then. And it was not a bad choice.
Let's go back to your mom.
Okay.
And what kind of hours did she work?
At the laundry?
At both at the laundry and when she was doing work at people's homes.
7:30 to 4:30 is what I remember at the laundry. And I don't remember the private family hours, but I don't remember them being long. Like,
did she work weekends also?
I don't think so. I mean, she wouldn't take a job that interfered with church. That was the thing I wanted to get to about her. She was very involved in St. Paul AME Church, which is a church that comes out of her family. Her great-grandfather founded the church kind of thing, and she was very into that church. She played music, played for the choir, so did I at one point. But she wouldn't take anything that interfered with church, so I'm pretty sure she didn't work weekends. Pretty sure.
Now, you talked also about your spending a lot of time with your grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Did she live in the same neighborhood?
You know what Domino Pizza is?
Yes.
That's where her shack sat, and it was a shack.
Is that off the 15501, the Domino's there?
Right there, no, right there in Carver.
In Carver, the Domino's,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There was a pear tree in the front yard that had the best pears, because it isn't there anymore. And she lived in a, if I remember, it's two or three room house. that when it burned, caught fire some kind of way, I don't think it was ever fixed.
Was it painted?
No.
And this was, when did it burn?
I don't remember that.
Approximately in the 40s or 50s or 60s?
Probably 40s. Probably in the 40s.
Now, the home that you and your parents lived in, can you describe that?
I can't really. It's a very small house. It's now painted gray on Graham Street. And I would say had 3-4 rooms maybe, but I'm really guessing. I've been in the house in 50 years, if not longer. But we left that house. My dad, for a spell, I think, had his own business, dry cleaning business. I don't know in what order this comes, whether it was before I was, I think it was before I was born. But he wasn't a good money manager. So when we left Graham Street, for whatever reason, moved from there, we moved to a house that Carver has a parking lot on right now. It's right across the street from Midway Barbershop. A woman named Eugenia Jones owned the house, and she was related to my mother. And we moved there. We must have lost the house on Graham Street. I mean, I think that's what happened, because we went, as I remember, we moved to Jeannie Jones, is what everybody called her, moved to her house. We were upstairs in what I remember being one room. I think that's right. It was really not a nice house, and it was scary because it was dark, and we had to come down a flight of stairs to, you know, get to ground floor. No electricity, so we had lamps, as we did at my grandmother's. And I don't think my grandmother ever had electricity. I always remember lamps at her house.
Running water in your house?
No, had a well. Because that was in the backyard. This is my grandmother. At my home, I think we may have had running water, but my grandmother had a well that sat in the back of her house. But no electricity. Okay. Then when we moved to Jeannie Jones' house, she didn't have electricity. We used lamps there. And it was a very old, not well-kept house, but it was a good, you know, it was a decent place, and we were safe, that kind of thing. And then my mom and dad bought where I currently live, which is the 505 Church Street. And that was in 1939. I had an Easter bunny that my mom gave me that year that we moved into the house. This I remember was 1939, because on the foot of the bunny, she wrote to Vivian, Happy Easter, 1939. I don't know where that bunny is now. But anyway, that's how I know that's when it was. And that house certainly was, it's an okay house. I mean, we did some work to it, my husband and I, after we married, and I moved. Moved back home. We went to D.C. for a little while, but I'm not a D.C. person. So we came back to Chapel Hill, and my husband and I lived with my mom and dad. And my dad, who about that time had a stroke and was very disabled. So we stayed with them and helped out with him for a while. And then he became mentally dysfunctional, so he had to go over to, I think it's Salisbury, where they take veterans. At any rate, he moved, we took him to a hospital, that's where he died, actually. It may have been Statesville, but I think it was Salisbury. Salisbury is where the VA hospital is. But I'm kind of jumping around here, but...
Let's go back to one point you made.
Okay.
That I think is really significant, and that is that your parents said to you, when you go to college,
right.
Not if you're going, but when you're
when
going.
You, that's right.
What kind of resources were provided for you in the home to help you with school so you could accomplish this? Did your parents have a dictionary, books,
I had,
encyclopedia, things like that?
I had whatever I needed, and it was a great sacrifice, I know, but I did have encyclopedias. I had any material that I needed. I had the best room in the house for my room. I can remember I was in a home ec class, home economics class, with a woman named Ruth Pope, who has a, came from a very distinguished family over in Raleigh, okay? And she used to really be after us to be ladies, and but she'd help us. We'd get a project, and she'd say, pick something that you want to fix up at your house. And I remember putting a little cloth around the table so that I could just stick things under there, but I'd have some place to work. That was my point about loving school, because they would just pack us down with work, and I loved it because it just made me feel so good to get those reports done and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, you have to keep asking because I get so caught up in what I'm talking about. It just...
You had said you wanted to stop at 3.
I do need to stop.
I'm right at the clock, and I've let you go 6 minutes
after. I was watching it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I got one right there, too.
Do you want to stop now?
Well, I do need to get home, but I this probably... If, are we about done? Okay, well then we probably need to reschedule. I do need to get home. Okay.
This is Bob Gilgore interviewing Vivian Fouché at her office at 1611 Franklin, East Franklin Street. And today is the 28th of March in the year 2001. Good afternoon, Vivian.
Hi, Bob.
I hope you had a good day today.
I have had.
Good. You look nice and smiley.
Well, thank you.
Bright-eyed.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to hear more about growing up in Chapel Hill, and then we'll get on with talking about the schools.
Okay. I realized after our last meeting that there was probably too much focus on how things were good, and my memory of that is still real. But I wanted to give you some taste of what we what I experienced in the school system that was segregated. And that is, there were many teachers who themselves didn't have self-respect and who treated us badly. The C.A. McDougall, the principal, was a real, for my money, a tyrant. And was particularly hard on some black boys in a way that I think if you happen to have interviewed any of them and they talk about it, they'll speak about the detrimental effect he had on them, their self-respect, their self-esteem. I mean, he could really be a tyrant. I remember once, I was in eighth grade in the library, and each door had a window, of course, so that you can walk by and look in. And the librarian, who was herself not even a competent teacher, but she was also very mean, but she had left the library to do some errand. And eighth graders being eighth graders, we were up messing around, being loud or whatever. And I remember looking up, for some reason, looking at the door, and Mr. McDougall was standing there with such a sneer on his face. I mean, it's like I can see it right now. And it was a really dirty, threatening look. And then he kind of, you know, charged into the room and said something to us about misbehaving or whatever. But the point I'm making is the way he disciplined and the way he interacted with us was always with a threat. It wasn't the... Now, he could be kind, I'm not saying he wasn't, but the main thrust for him with us kids was harshness. And when I think of C.A. McDougall, I think of harsh. I think of harshness. Now, he had people that he, of course, didn't behave that way with, but primarily how I experience him is like that, just real harsh and kind of scary. The librarian at that time was a woman named Mrs. Smith, don't remember her first name, but she mainly sat and twirled her hair. She really didn't care much about whether we got what we needed to get. And I would say that she was in the minority, but she was there, okay? And There was one other teacher that I think of was just so obviously incompetent that it was scary. His name was Groton. He was an eighth grade teacher, and he just clearly didn't have it, but there he was. He wasn't mean, and he wasn't harsh, but he wasn't a good teacher. And seventh and eighth grade, if I remember this correctly, are for the most part pretty pivotal grades in terms of whether you go on or not. And it's interesting to me as I think back on it that when my class went into eighth grade, we were so big in terms of numbers, we had to have two sections. And when we graduated, I don't know the number, but we didn't have two sections of that class, if I remember. I may have that fuzzy, but I remember we just continued to lose students. And there were people who were, for whatever reason, not being respected or put down or not valued in the system, and they just dropped out. It's much like what we have now, where kids get disenchanted, teachers aren't really interested or whatever, and they lose interest. So I'm saying it's parallel, but I can't really, that's the best I can do to describe it.
Do you think some of the students dropped out to earn a living to help their families?
I don't think that, well, that's, I'm sure that's what they did. They went to work. But I think what I want you to get from what I'm saying is the atmosphere in the school was not all that conducive to everybody's learning.
So there was a segment of the student body,
yes,
that was not being seen the same,
that's right,
as everyone else.
That's
and,
right.
And they were getting lost.
That's right. That's right. We had a significant number of kids who got lost. That's right.
Would you say that over half of your class that started high school graduated, or less than, or about half? Can you give some percentage?
I'm really guessing, but I'd say maybe less than half of us. That's probably wrong, but that would be my guess. We lost a lot of kids.
Of those who graduated, do you have any idea of how many went on to college or further education?
In my class, I'll say in my group, I know that the girls that I ran with, all of us went to North Carolina Central in Durham, and several of the boys went away to school, but I don't have as clear a picture of that. So, excuse me, maybe 10, 15 of us?
Out of
35, 40? I'm really guessing. Those figures could be absolutely wrong. But I know I had one classmate who went to Virginia Union, and let's see, one that went to AMT. And just, these are just people that I kind of ran with. That would be nine of us. That's the best I can do. But I know that I'd say a fair number of us went off to college.
Can you... I don't want to focus on the downside, but
it helps to add the reality to what that experience was.
That's what I'm after,
yes,
is reality.
Right.
Can you talk about the facilities of the school?
We had a science room with, I don't even know what you call them, I guess where you were supposed to have gotten water, it's called a spigot or whatever. Nothing in that room worked. Nothing. And we had, that's where we went for science. But we never did, that I remember, we probably did some experiments, but we didn't have the equipment ever to do what we needed to do. And I just remember, I could see this sink there that I don't think ever, that I remember at least, was ever used. It was just there.
Did you have gas?
That's what it was, gas. No, we didn't have any gas.
No gas.
No, not that I remember.
Chemicals?
Not that I remember. Not that I remember.
What about the playground?
Full of rocks. When I think about Northside, I think I remember that we used to go out for recess and play softball, whatever. And there were these huge rocks that you had to be mindful of. Much like the auditorium, but we played with the
posts
in the way. Mm-hmm. But, well, you know, we were out there, but it was, could have been considered dangerous.
Did the auditorium have a special name? The gym have a special name?
No, but I know.
What about the desks, the books?
The desks that I remember always looked used, and I don't know that I guess I did get new books along the way. So I guess at some point we had new books, but never enough new books to go around. You'd have, some kids would get new books, other kids would get more used books. So they'd be good, fair. How to rate that? New books, good books, fair books. I think it's how it was. But never enough new books for everybody.
Did everybody have books?
As far as I know, everybody had a book, but it was just the quality of the book, I mean, the shape that the book was in. But I think everybody had a book, and I mean, I don't remember that. I don't really know, but I think so.
Did you have a locker room?
No. But I think maybe the football team may have had a locker room in the shop area. But upstairs where we were and had classes, no, we didn't have lockers.
Now you graduated from the Archer County Training School area.
Mm-hmm. Northside.
Northside. That was in what year?
51.
Of the last year existed as such.
The very last, that's right.
Did you have showers over there?
I guess downstairs where the boys showered for football. I don't know. Probably. I was trying to remember what my husband said about that because he played football. But I don't remember.
What was the was the practice field right there in the school ground?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, practice field was right there where the playground was. I mean, it's all one field.
But you didn't have rocks on the football field.
Well, see, when you rocks go back. There used to be a flat surface, and then you'd go up the hill where kids who weren't participating in sports could sit, and that's where the rocks were.
So they'd sit on the rocks and watch the games?
Yes, and so if you're playing softball and you hit a ball out to the edge of the field and you're going for the ball, you could run into the rocks. But not on the field. I certainly don't mean to say, well, there may have been, I don't know. But I meant back there where people were sitting, but even so, you're there where you could run into them and get hurt. It seems to me, though, not on the playing field, but right alongside the building were also a lot of rocks where people, again, would sit, and that was a shaded area. But and that's what I remember. You know, I may be making all of this up, but that's what I remember.
Are there other things that you recall about people at the school or clubs? You mentioned the librarian.
Mm-hmm.
How well stocked was the library?
I don't know what to compare it with. I mean, it seemed pretty full to me. You know, I mean, my memory is when you needed something, it was there, but I didn't have anything else to compare it with. It looked pretty good.
Did the parking area, you had buses coming in there?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, where did the buses come to the rear? Yeah, okay, the buses came in on, off of Church Street onto McMaster's, came to the back of the building. Of course, I never rode a bus because I live right down Church Street.
So the entry was down by that branch. Or most of the kids came to the school up that hill,
If you're walking, from, you know where the housing authority is? It's in, you know what Carwell Street Extension is?
Uh-huh.
Okay. If you're going along there, those of us walking into the school from Carwell Extension would have to go uphill, would have to cross over the branch. That's true. That's true. But now kids coming in on the bus, I don't think they had to ever do any negotiating about that creek there because they were in back of the school. That's, I mean,
so the front of the school faced the creek.
Yeah. That, well, the front of the school faced the Caldwell Extension, and the creek is to the far right. And at some point, they put a cafeteria there.
So they didn't have a cafeteria?
Well, yeah, we ate in one of the classrooms. We ate in Miss Pope's home ec room.
That was your...
That was a cafeteria.
That was your cafeteria. So for a while, you didn't have a cafeteria.
That's right. Not designated cafeteria. That's right. We ate in the home ec room. And I don't know at what point we got this cafeteria, but I remember we got the new building. It was a cafeteria. And we had an organization. It may have been called Y Teams or something like that. And we were having a meeting in the cafeteria, and I don't even know what put got this started, but I cursed one of the students. I don't know what was happening. I may have been president or something, but anyway, I did something very inappropriate, and I don't even know what I said, but I got in trouble for it. And I remember Mr. Smith, RD, talking to me about cursing and using profanity, and so did my basketball coach, R.O. Carnegie, and they were very disappointed with me, and I was just, you know, I was in a lot of trouble for a long time for cursing. And I don't know what that was about, but I remember it's been a long time, but I remember that, and I cursed a girl who was a good friend of mine. Her name was Barbara Lee Jones. In fact, sister-in-law to Mary Norwood Jones, which Barbara Lee and I were on the basketball team together. So that goes back to that cafeteria.
Were there any favorite hangouts?
There's a place called Ben Baldwin's on